Welcome to the University of Michigan Press podcast, featuring interviews with University of Michigan Press authors. In AD 79, Mount Vesuvius erupted in two stages. While the first stage was incredibly destructive, it was the second stage, a so-called pyroclastic flow, that inundated Pompeii with a combination of superheated gases, pumice, and rocks, killing tens of thousands of people and animals and burying them in ash and mud. Pompeii's living statues, as a narrative account, supported by contemporary documents, of the remarkable discovery of those ancient victims preserved in the volcanic mud of Vesuvius. Eugene Dwyer is professor of art history at Kenyon College. Trained at Harvard and the Institute of Fine Arts at New York University, he has contributed articles to numerous volumes on Italian architecture and archaeology published by presses including Cambridge University Press, Getty Publications, and the University of Michigan Press. He is the author of Pompeian Domestic Sculpture, a study of five Pompeian houses and their contents. How were the statues that your book's title refers to first created?
The book is about a group of statues that emerged at the end of the 19th century as miraculous products from the ruins of Pompeii. They're a combination of natural productions caused by the eruption of Vesuvius in 79 AD and human intervention or human skill in the casting of using the opportunities that these statues or the context, the archaeological context of these statues presented. Giuseppe Fiorelli, who was the director of the Pompeii excavations at the time, beginning around 1860 with the emergence of the new Italian state, Fiorelli discovered how he could inject a mixture of plaster of Paris and glue, which is what is are the component parts of gesso, into the cavities that were made in the volcanic ash, which he knew from previous experience contained the shapes of the buried victims of Pompeii. Previously, these shapes had been uncovered, but the workers had ruined them as they simply dug out the skeletons. They were just looking for gold, pretty much, before 1860 or so. But Fiorelli was more of an archaeologist, and he wanted to find out as much as possible about antiquity as he could from the excavation. So it really represents a kind of change in the life of Pompeii. Unfortunately, we really don't know the details of Fiorelli's process, but we do know that it's necessary to pump this gesso material into the cavity because you can't just pour it in. Finding the highest water level would be very difficult, and it has to be forced in with a pump. What happened, the cavity had formed around the body at the time of the destruction of the city, the time of the eruption of Vesuvius. And when the body decayed over the course of time, it actually left the impression of the surface of the flesh, including clothing and other detail, hairstyle, even hair arrangement, with the bones in the middle of the cast. So basically it would be a shell underground with skeletal remains in it. Fiorelli noticed that these bubbles in the volcanic ash appeared when his workmen were digging with a pick. But before his time, there was never any qualified archaeologist on the spot to stop the work and to order up 50 gallons of gesso to conduct this kind of experiment. Anyway, he was in readiness this time in the 1860s when he was in control. In 1863, his opportunity came along. The workmen found a hole in the ground, and Fiorelli reached in, he said, and identified skeletal matter inside, and then he filled it with the gesso. It was allowed to harden for 2 days and then dug out. And when it was dug out, there was a body. There was a sculpture. I call it a sculpture because it's really a combination of nature and art. And in a sense, it's a living sculpture because, although of course it's not really alive, it wasn't alive when he discovered it. It struck people as very much alive. They had never seen anything like this because every ancient body that had ever been known to Europeans had been either laid out for burial or embalmed, as in Egyptian burial, or if someone had died as a victim of an accident or catastrophe, their bones were generally disintegrated, or the skeletal remains were scattered, and certainly the flesh contours were never preserved. So this was really quite a new discovery, and Fiorelli understandably crowed about it in the press. That's how he announced it to the world.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about that. So really, how detailed were these casts?
The casts really struck observers at the time as being extraordinarily lifelike, and that they offered a vision of antiquity that they had, of the type, as I said, that they had never seen before. They were used to seeing statues in the museum, and of course, heroic or mythological statues for the most part, or even emperors, Roman emperors, are often unclothed and or in what we call heroic nudity. The Pompeians, on the other hand, appeared to be wearing a lot of clothing, unless in a couple of cases the clothing got sort of blown away in the violence of the eruption, and we have cases of that as well. But there was enough evidence for contemporary viewers of Fiorelli's casts to see that many of the victims were wearing underwear, trousers. The women wore pants sometimes, as well as the men. And they wore all sorts of different fabrics, and also sometimes they were carrying jewelry because they were all fugitives at the time. They were actually fleeing Pompeii, so they took the treasures that they could gather up in their house. Some of them had keys, and they were also lost because they were running across the surface of the top of the city, the part that had been buried for the previous 12 to 20 hours of rain of cinders and ash, and they were running in the dark, and they were certainly lost. To get back to the question of how detailed they were, the remains are detailed, sometimes maybe even invasive of privacy because of the way they were found. It was a lot of detail as far as people were used to.
So what importance do these statues hold in the study of life in that place and period?
Fiorelli originally was very much of an antiquarian. He believed that this new form of archaeology, new form of evidence, could give testimony to the way the ancients looked in reality. It really fit in very much with the new ideas of historiography that were coming in the end of the 19th century. Life as ancient world as it really was, rather than the ideal that had been presented to Europeans and Americans mostly before that time. So Fiorelli believed that the bodies would reveal details of clothing, and also that the pathology of the bodies could be used for medical studies to determine both the presence of previous operations that people had, surgeries, and also, of course, a very dominant type of medicine in the 19th century was physiognomy and physiology, and they were quite interested in whether or not these people had, since they were from Pompeii and known to be have led a luxurious lifestyle, they wanted to know whether their skulls showed the characteristics of sort of wanton behavior. So he believed that the bodies themselves would show a lot of evidence, and he therefore isolated them and began to put them in a museum. And he showed them to visitors who came by, consulted at the excavations. But he also came increasingly to realize that the bodies gave a lot of evidence about the circumstances of the destruction of Pompeii, the volcanic conditions that actually brought about their death. And so they showed symptoms of dying. And these were debated. Fiorelli originally thought that they had drowned because many of their stomachs were swollen, but he later came to realize that the reason the stomachs were swollen was that some of his casts were faulty, and that the the gesso had not actually adhered to the cavity. So there was a combination of technical difficulties that he had to overcome, as well as diagnostic difficulties. Finally, I think, in my opinion, one of the most important things that these bodies held for the study, or kind of evidence that they held, is that of their effect on contemporary observers in the end of the 19th century. And I think this, again, is goes back to that questioning or the creation of a new idea of what the classical world was all about. People were really struck by how similar to modern Neapolitans these Pompeians looked and dressed, and in fact that there might be more continuity there than they were willing to believe. And that, so I think that the exhibition of the statues was something that was really quite revolutionary at the time, and very much in keeping with Fiorelli's idea of self-presentation as a scientist, and his interpretation of the ruins of Pompeii as a scientific archaeological park. So again, the impact on contemporaries would be the third kind of context that we need to consider. First, the pre-eruption of Vesuvius and what they tell us about Pompeii in antiquity. Second, what they told us about Pompeii at the time of destruction. And thirdly, what they tell us about ourselves, about, well, the 19th century at least, challenged to what we call Victorian ideas.
Okay, so talk a little bit more about what happened to the statues after they were created.
As the casts were made in the topmost, almost just under the topsoil, a very high layer well above the ancient ground level in Pompeii, it was, in order to continue the excavations down to street level, it was necessary to remove the casts and remove the layer in which they were found. And furthermore, since they were of plaster, they would be very susceptible to damage in any kind of rain or conditions. And they were found in February 1863. At least the first four of them. So they were removed immediately from their context. And unfortunately, although photography had just been established as a not only as a scientific tool, but also as a commercial art form in the Naples area in the 1860s, unfortunately they were not photographed as they lay, but only photographed later when they were relocated as kind of museum objects. Now they were taken from the place where they were uncovered, and they were put in a series of temporary homes, one on actual Pompeian house that was adapted for the purpose of displaying them, and that's where William Dean Howells and Mark Twain viewed them in the 1860s on separate occasions, and other people saw them at that house. But then in 1875, Fiorelli was able to finally open a museum on the site at Pompeii, which was a proper museum and devoted to the casts themselves of the bodies and pottery and other architectural fragments that were too insignificant as art objects to be carried off to Naples, which is where the great masterpieces from Pompeii were still going at that time. So the Pompeii Site Museum opened in 1875, and it flourished until about 1900, when it got very tired as a museum because it was badly in need of restoration even at that time. And it had filled up with about, by my count, about 16 or 17 bodies, and they were being arranged in sort of one on top of another, in cases one on top of another at that time, and did begin to look rather crowded at that point. So the Pompeii Site Museum lasted until the beginning of the 20th century, when it was then restored. But then, unfortunately, in 1943, it was bombed during the war. And I think at that point, some of the casts, including probably Fiorelli's original four, were destroyed, not ever recovered. Some of the casts, however, that had been made in the 1870s do still exist and can be seen in Pompeii.
Is there the opportunity for this kind of discovery in any other locations?
I think so. I'm not a volcanologist, but volcanoes of the Vesuvian type, that is a volcano that sort of blows its stack, and a secondary phase results in what's called the pyroclastic flow, where the column of material that's been spewn out of the volcanic chimney then collapses and cascades down the side of the mountain, gathering dust and organic debris and covering things in its path. We'll certainly have covered humans in different areas of the world. If they're far enough away from the epicenter of the volcano and the temperature doesn't exceed about 400 degrees Fahrenheit or so, then the soft tissues of victims would still be preserved, even though, of course, they couldn't survive that kind of heat flow and lack of oxygen, another thing that happens that under those conditions. But at Herculaneum, for instance, which is much closer to the center of the volcano. Although Herculaneum escaped the first part of cinders, the explosion of the inert material in the volcano that went mostly south, Herculaneum did suffer the pyroclastic flows and surges later in the eruption, and people were killed at much higher temperatures and consequently, the only thing that remains of the victims at Herculaneum are the skeletons, so there are no envelopes, no possibilities of casts of the surrounding flesh. But within the radius of Pompeii, for example, Opluntis near Pompeii, there have been casts made of victims there. And again, I would think, you know, anywhere in the world where there's a volcano of this type and a population center that might have been overcome. At any time in history, the possibility of these kinds of statues do exist, yeah.
Why are the casts of interest today?
Speaking as a human being, I would say that I find them terribly interesting, and I think most people do when they go to Pompeii. They see the city and they try to people the ruins with imaginary people, and occasionally if they stumble across one of these casts, their attention is drawn like a magnet to the body themselves, because there is a real Pompeian, and you can identify it as the person, even though it is a work of art, like a cast rather than an actual body. You can identify it as a person, and you do make a correspondence between yourself and the possible victim. You know, there but for the grace of God go I. So in that sense, it's a bodies like this are perennial interest, and they also seem to have something very archetypal in terms of sculpture, what we think of sculpture, and these are sculptures where the subject matter is present in the object itself. It's like a reliquary with the bones of the saint, you know, actually included in the object. For that reason, I think the recent exhibitions of these casts from Naples and from Pompeii have been very successful when they've toured around the world and the U.S. So people do see them and find them endlessly fascinating.
Well, this has been very fascinating. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us, Professor Dwyer.
Very happy to.
We have been speaking with Eugene Dwyer, author of Pompeii's Living Statues, Ancient Roman Lives Stolen from Death. To learn more about our books, visit us on the web at press.umich.edu. This podcast has been brought to you by the University of Michigan Press, all rights reserved.